Good morning, everybody. Do you find dinosaurs interesting? Yay! One young guy. One person. Well, by the time we finish, everyone's going to be going, yay, I love dinosaurs too. But not everyone does. I mean, I remember I was at the bike shop, and I was asking the bike mechanic about my bicycle. I had repairs going in there. And I said, you know, the question came up, what do you do? And so I get the fun job of saying, I get to write articles for the Institute for Creation Research, which people go, what in the world does that mean? And so, you know, we got in that conversation. Well, what do you do? And, well, I do research and write on dinosaurs. And he goes, dinosaurs? Creation? Wait a minute. You believe dinosaurs were real? And I said, well, yes. And he said, oh, I've met Christian people who have told me that dinosaurs are all imaginary. They're not real at all. And I thought, well, that's not me. But there's confusion out there. And I wonder, why would Christians tell the bike shop guy that dinosaurs aren't real? And I think I know why. I've been thinking about this and talking with people for a long time. And one of the reasons that some Christians, suggest that dinosaurs didn't even exist is that they look at the everything they're told about dinosaurs. Is that they lived millions of years ago, for example. And then what they do is they open their Bible, these Christians, which they should do, right? It's a good thing. And they find that in the scripture, there's a six-day creation that's about 6,000 years ago. If you add up the genealogies, that's the numbers you get. And there just isn't any place or room for millions of years, at least blatantly, it's not there in the scripture. So then they say, you know what? The dinosaurs and their millions of years, all of it is out of here. It's all made up. And that's their solution. Or sometimes they might go to the Bible and say, well, what I've been told about dinosaurs is that they evolved from some kind of non-dinosaur reptile, and they evolved into what? Birds. But then we look at Genesis, and what does it say? God created the creatures to reproduce after their own kind, not morphing between kinds. And so they look at what the world says about dinosaurs, evolution, millions of years, and they say, you know what? Evolution's not in my Bible. Millions of years isn't in my Bible. So I'm getting rid of the evolution, getting rid of the millions of years, and getting rid of the dinosaurs that come with them. Well, I'm here today to tell you that there's scientific evidence that strongly supports the idea that the evolution and the millions of years do not go together with dinosaurs. That's what I'm here to tell you. So I basically want to give you five dinosaur details, and I wish I knew these details, because I think every Christian can, once they get these five details, can put together the pieces for themselves. Every Christian can basically look at these five details and say, oh, okay, so the real science confirms what the Bible says about world history. And if the Bible's right about dinosaurs and history, then the Bible's right about everything else it discusses. So are you ready for the five details? Okay, thank you, front 10 rows. Back rows, I'm watching you. The first detail has to do with clever design. Clever design. I had a guy tell me once, I think the devil made the dinosaurs. Oh, man, they didn't exist. No, the devil made them. I mean, what wacky ideas. Now, devils don't make clever design, not in the Bible. But the dinosaurs revealed, they reveal their clever design. Here's one of my favorite dinosaurs. This is Diplodocus. I took this picture. You see the clunky, like I stood in one place. This is the Denver Museum. And I took a picture, and then I moved the camera and took another picture, and I stitched them together. But it's hard to get the whole body. They're so big. Well, how do you, you know, into one camera frame, so you have to do this sometimes. But how do you make something that's that big? I mean, it's 100 feet long from nose to tail tip. And yet still it can walk and move and breathe and do everything it did. That's an engineering feat. And you have to recognize the clever design, like the design we see in the hips. Hips. Do you see the little glowing dot? This is new technology to me. I'm excited. Yeah, here's the hips. And we see an arch-shaped design, just like we see the ancient Roman aqueducts had arches. And this is not by accident. So this is clever design. And that's what we had. We had the dinosaurs had... Oh, where are we going? Had these... do you see the arch? It's right here. There's an arch there at the top of the hip bone. There's a little tiny arch in the femur where this... You know the femur is. It's this leg bone here. Biggest bone in the vertebrate's body, and so there's arches that support all that dinosaur body weight. That's clever design. This has been standing for 2,000 years. It's so well designed. And then we had knees. Their knees actually grew bigger as they grew larger. So it's adapting to its own body size. That's clever. Imagine building an aqueduct that gets bigger as more and more water travels through it. That's an engineering feat that we can't even do as humans. So the engineering in these dinosaurs is just amazing, especially how do you make a long neck? It's like the engineering problem of building an airplane wing. You got to have the right materials in the right layout, and all the parts have to fit together just the right way in order to make this work. And that's exactly what we see in the dinosaur vertebrae. Did you know when you came to Sunday school this morning you would hear words like vertebrae? Yes, so that's your back, your neck bones, and these had lots of neck bones. But notice about these, they're different than all the other dinosaurs. The other dinosaurs have big block-shaped vertebrae, like bricks. These have big raised ridges, hollowed out gaps, hollow spaces in the middle of the vertebrae. Just like my bicycle has not a solid disc for the chain ring, but the chain ring has got lots of little holes and the tubes are hollow. And the bones of certain bones on these sauropods were literally hollow. Weight-saving features. What do you call those weight-saving features? Clever design. Examples of clever design all throughout. And I'm going to skip that because I can't read it. But it's a guy talking about clever design. This picture I took at the Chicago Field Museum last year, and it says sauropods were engineered. They were engineered for size. Now this is a placard at a museum. It's a secular evolutionary museum. They believe nature engineered these sauropods. That's crazy. Nature doesn't engineer anything. It just blows wind and destroys order. You know, nothing organizes itself. We see that every day in every way. But anyway, that's the prevailing cultural concept of origins, is nature did it. But we see too much clever design that goes beyond what we could even do as humans. I love this brachiosaur because it's not only does it have these hollowed out necks vertebrae, it also has, do you see these long bars? These are called ribs, cervical ribs. They're like neck ribs. Each one of these is 1.5 vertebrae long, which is the perfect length to be an automatic dampening rod. And that's exactly what it was for brachiosaurus. So that without these little vertebrae, ribs, he would reach out to try to take a bite of a leaf, and he'd take a step, oh, I want that leaf. And then the vibrations of him taking a step would make his head wiggle and wobble, and he'd never get the food. But with these dampening rods, he takes a step and he's stable. The whole length of his neck was stable without having to exert any effort to stabilize it. And his head was right there and he could eat that whatever he's eating. Just like the stabilizing rods, these leaf springs that we have in our car. You ever look underneath the car? Yeah, it's grungy down there, but there's lots of engineering, lots of clever design. Well, I think the ultimate example of clever design is the egg. So I'm holding a hadrosaur egg. And I mean, you designed, you clever, you could design these kind of doohickeys and, you know, screens and cameras, people design. But design an egg, you know, anything that can fit in your hand that will hatch out of your hand, eat food from its environment, grow, repair itself if it gets damaged. I mean, isn't that amazing? Imagine taking a laptop and it, you drop it. Oh, my laptop's broken. But just wait a couple months. It'll repair itself. Wouldn't that be great? Well, that's what happens with us, our bodies, with dinosaur bodies. We have the evidence in their healed bones, for example, that they repaired themselves. That's an incredible design, far beyond what humans could even think about achieving. And even making more laptops. Wait, this is going to reproduce itself. And it's going to make more of its own kind. How do you do that? That's just unreal. But that's the design that our Lord Jesus put into these things when he made them. And that's what we should conclude. So the evidence from anatomy confirms what we see explicitly in Genesis 1:25, where God said, "And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind." I think dinosaurs qualify as beasts of the earth. Do you agree? Some of you agree. The rest of you have your arms folded. That's okay. That's all right. I'm working on you. We're getting there. We also see this. If I have told you earthly things and don't believe that, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things? This is Jesus talking to Nicodemus in John chapter 3. And I think this is what we're all about at the Institute for Creation Research. We have six PhD scientists in all these different disciplines, and we have a staff of 45 that support us. We've been in existence for almost 45 years. And all these decades, we've had one vision, one mission, and that is to illustrate and explain and explore the science that supports Scripture. Because if we can do that, then we can show our friends and family and even can persuade ourselves that the Bible is right about the earthly things. If it's right about the earthly things, then we can trust it when it talks about heavenly things. And that's what our whole ministry emphasis is. Let's go to the second detail. What was the first detail? Anyone remember? Clever design. And so this one's going to be catastrophic death. Oh, it's the sad one. Pull out your hankies to dab your tears. Here we go. This is a Camarasaurus. You want to see these dinosaur names? It's kind of fun to say Camarasaurus. All right. Front five rows again. I got to hear you back row people. I like the back row. I was a back row Baptist myself once. Looking at this Camarasaurus, does this look like a normal crime scene? Does this look like what happens to animals when they die in the field? When, like, a cow dies, what happens to that cow? Does it get buried in sediment where its whole body is intact except its neck is mashed? Here's what they decided on this technical report. They said the postmortem dorsiflexion disarticulated the zygapophyses such that it was preserved in a pose that was unlikely attainable in life. I mean, duh. Everybody knows that. Postmortem, that means after it died, its neck bones broke. So after it died, its neck broke. This is violent. So we're talking about catastrophe. Cows. When a cow dies, what happens? Its carcass gets eaten by scavengers. And if the scavengers don't get it, the germs, the microbes, and everything, the fungus eats it, and you end up with no cow. The whole cow's carcass gets completely recycled, and it's gone. It disappears in months. Depending on, you know, where it's deposited, how wet it is. Well, these were deposited in marine, you know, which is ocean sediments with fish fossils next to them. Sea creature fossils are buried all amongst all the dinosaur layers, as well as bird fossils, by the way. So it's catastrophic looking, catastrophic definitely. For example, we've got the National Geographic book on the family book for dinosaurs. And they tell us this really important about this Compsognathus. Compsognathus, it's the turkey-sized dinosaur. If you saw Jurassic Park 3, the little dinosaurs that jumped all over the guy and he got lost and separated. Jurassic Park fans? There's like nobody. Okay, five people, good. Anyway, the turkey-sized dinosaur, it was kind of a creepy scene, but it's Compsognathus. And, well, here's the thing about Compsognathus. Because scientists were there, and they know these things. They can tell us exactly what happened. He lived close to the shore of a calm lake. We know because we were there, right? Wait a minute. Does the fossil tell us where it lived? Or where it died. It could have been transported to where it died. In fact, that's what we think happened. Because calm lakes today do not make fossils. If you dig around in a calm lake, I did this once. You're going to grow up, you're going to get a canoe. Have you ever been in a canoe? I'm pointing to the little young man. You've been in a canoe? Okay, so you go to a calm lake and you paddle with your canoe and you dig that canoe paddle down into the mud at the bottom of that calm lake. What happens? Do you chunk into fossils? Oh, that's a fossil fish. No. Everybody say no fossils. What you'll find is stinky mud. And the bubbles will come up. So what you do is you get in the front of the canoe and you paddle and then you dig the mud and then you wait for the bubbles to come up and hit the person in the back of the canoe and they get to have all the bad smells. Ask me how I know. After death, the animal's body sank to the bottom of the lake. This is how fossils happen, right? It's not how fossils happen because it's not happening today. Fossils do not happen in the bottom of the lake. But we do have these. We have Compsognathids. I mean, look at these. Catastrophic death is what I see. I mean, look at the one on the right. The Compsognathus sank calmly to the bottom of a calm lake, and then its head was calmly smashed against its rear end. Really? This is not calm. I mean, I don't think it's calm. This is catastrophic. I keep pushing the wrong button. That's the head. That's the hip. Smash. They were smashed together. It was catastrophic. And we see this all over the fossils. Bird fossils. Heads smashed over. Necks wrenched back. Neck is upside down. Maybe he's choking. You know, some scientists did a study where they put a bunch of chickens in a bunch of mud. Poor chickens. But they're delicious. And they uncovered the mud a few weeks later, and they found that the chickens had choked on the mud, and they had arched their necks back. And they call this the opisthotonic posture, and we see it in the fossils. There's one extreme. An agonizing death, says this placard. I took this photo in Bozeman at the Museum of the Rockies. It says, this creature died an agonizing death. It was choking. It was choking. And I thought, what could possibly choke it? Maybe it's all the mud that's all around it that hardened into rock. But no, the placard says it was choking because probably another dinosaur was grappling its neck and choking it. Looking for the other dinosaur. Do you see the other? No, there's no other. It was choking on mud. Hello. It's covered with mud. This same mud package rolled across the entire western United States. This is massive catastrophe on an unprecedented scale. Hardly even able to imagine how much mud and death and destruction happened. Here's the famous T-Rex Sue. Have you seen Sue at the Field Museum in Chicago? You've seen Sue. Sue. Two Sue. Sewers. Sorry. Now, the one on display in the lobby is in the top left. The one on display is anatomically reconstructed to where it was. The bones were positioned in lifelike. But the real one is a little bit different. Do you see the difference? What's different about the real one, which is in a display case on the upper balcony at the Field Museum? Yeah, the nose. Look at the nose. Nice and straight nose bridge. Not straight. smushed. So I thought, what caused this smushed nose bridge? And there's no evidence of the bone healing, so it happened after the dinosaur died. Was it a calm, normal death? Oh, finally we get an explanation. Crushed nose. Oh, let's read. And I go over to this placard and it says, when Sue was found, her pelvis was resting on top of her snout. Whoa, that's crazy. Though it may sound odd, yes it does. Discovering a theropod dinosaur in this death pose is surprisingly common. The pose may be caused by muscle spasms. I got to the part where it said muscle spasms, and I couldn't control myself. I was laughing so much. Muscle, are you kidding me? I mean, I can have a muscle spasm, but that is not going to take my head and smash it against my hip and break my nose from a muscle spasm. I mean, these stories that we're telling, and you know, these poor people. This gal right here, where's my button? She's reading that sign right now in earnestness. She's like, muscle spasms, yes. You know, like the experts, the museum experts, they know. So I'm just going to soak in whatever they tell me. And I used to be like that until I started thinking for myself and putting the clues together and thinking, wait a minute, fossils don't form in anywhere like this. Catastrophic death where you die and then you get smashed to bits doesn't happen today. Something totally different, something radical, something powerful happened in the past. Something that could bury. Okay, so we've got the T-Rex, Stan, that's not the T-Rex, that's the T-Rex. Hill City, South Dakota, and this is a T-Rex in Montana, and then here's one, that's Sue. And these are spectacular animals, 45 feet long, huge, 7 to 9 tons, scientists estimate. I mean, he could just go anywhere he wanted. And yet, his whole entire body, completely encased in mud that quickly turned into rock. Just when it dried out, sediments will lithify or turn into rock when they dry. And it happened all over the American West. And in other places, China has their own version of T-Rex. And in other continents. So every continent has these rock layers that have these dinosaurs. Every single continent has dinosaurs in their rock layers. It's worldwide catastrophe. Does that remind you of anything in the Bible? A worldwide catastrophe involving lots of water, lots of mud, Noah's Ark, Noah's flood. Hey, that rhymed. It should remind us of Genesis 7, and the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. Does this mean the Himalayas? No. This is the high hills that existed in the pre-flood world. The Himalayas were not constructed until at the end of the flood. You could tell because of the position of the different rock layers that were buckled up. And the mountains came up through those rock layers. So the rock layers happened first, the flood happened first, then the mountains happened, involving massive continental collisions. And this is happening all during 1 year, the year-long Noah's flood. So, this is what we'd expect to find. Catastrophic death all over the world if the Bible is right about the flood. And that's what we find. I'm going to skip that one for time's sake. Well, the third detail has to do with clashes with dragons. So we have clever design, which tells us God actually made these things. Catastrophic death, big clue, tells us that the flood destroyed these things. But did some come on the ark? I mean, two of every creature, God said, went onto the ark. And Noah brought two of every creature. Land-dwelling, air-breathing creatures with nostrils, Genesis 7 specifies. Well, a lot of these dinosaurs lived in swamps, so maybe they were considered land animals enough to be on the ark. They survived the flood. We know because of clashes with dragons that happened after the flood. So this is history. So we're going to go from looking at the fossil clues. Now we're going to switch and look at the clues from human history. We have pretty spectacular evidence. This placard says no one has ever seen a living dinosaur. No one has ever seen a living dinosaur. This is at a science museum, but let me ask you, is that a science statement? No, it's not. What would you have to do to verify that statement with science? Yeah, you'd have to interview everyone who has ever lived to make sure that you know scientifically that no one has ever seen a living dinosaur. This is propaganda, and I don't buy it, and I'm open to the evidence, the possibility that there's evidence from human history of dragons, or what they call dragons, may match what we today call dinosaurs, because the word dinosaur wasn't invented until 1842 anyways. So they called it dragons before 1842. That's what I think. Here's the Chinese calendar or zodiac, and each of their years has a different animal associated with it, right? You remember this from China? What is that, a rat? The year of the rat? That's probably the year I was born, I don't know. The year of the chicken, and the year of the... In Chinese, it's long. That's their word for dragon. So if you have a word for it, and if it's associated with all these other actual animals, maybe millennia ago when this calendar was constructed and when these animals were associated with the different months, these animals were all real, but the dragon has since gone extinct from China. That's a possibility we should consider and not just go, there's no way. There's no way that people could have ever seen a living dinosaur, because dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago and people didn't evolve until 3 million years ago. That's the story. But do you see the circularity in that logic? You just assumed that dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago in order to argue that there's no evidence that dinosaurs survived until recent times. So that's called circular reasoning, and that's a bad way to reason. You guys aren't very active this morning. We need to do jumping jacks. Clever design. Catastrophic death. Clashes with dragons. This is the ancient Babylonian cylinder seal. And this is a carved cylinder. And they would roll it out onto clay. And then they would bake the clay. And you see this creature with long neck, long tail, and legs that go straight down. This is on display at the Louvre Museum in Paris. And legs that go straight down. That's interesting, because if they're depicting, like a crocodile, what do their legs do? Out. And they kind of waddle when they walk, you know. But dinosaurs, legs straight down. Even the sauropod dinosaurs, the ones with four legs and long neck, their legs went straight down from the body. That was a characteristic of dinosaur-type reptiles. And we see that in this depiction. And in this one, I went to Carlisle Cathedral in England to take a picture of this. It's a little brass decoration that wraps around Bishop Bell's tomb. He's deposited right in the middle of the aisle at the church. I think it's funny to bury your pastor in the aisle, but I guess that's what they did back then. And it's a beautiful grave. And it's got normal creatures like pheasants, foxes, eels, birds, fish, and this. And it's got a long tail, and then it's got legs that go straight down and two intertwined necks. And we see the same motif even in something like this far, far away in Egypt. This ancient Egyptian, it's called the Narmer palette. And we see legs straight down. We see anatomically pretty accurate people, a bull, and then there's this. Legs go straight down, not enough room for the long tail, plenty of room for the long necks that are intertwined. And maybe this is some sort of a clue as to these sauropod look-alike behavior. Thousands of years separate, England from the 1400s, and then 2 plus, some say 4,000 years ago with this palette, thousands of miles separate. And yet we're depicting the same shape of body and the same activity. I think there's more to it than just pure chance. And of course the Babylonian cylinder seal is very similar also. And then we have these medieval castles. This one's in France, and it shows, if your legs go straight down, but you squat, they'd be squished up like this. And scaly reptile. This one is the one where you can go and get a t-shirt at the Chateau du Chambord, and it says, I haven't been there, but I've heard you can get a t-shirt that says, I visited Salamander Castle. Salamander. Huh. Salamander's legs go out. Salamanders have no scales. Salamanders don't have long necks. And this castle is covered with this creature, and they're calling it a salamander. I don't know why. Except that if they had to pick another animal, it would probably match what we see in dinosaurs, fossils. Here's another one at Chateau du Chambord with a creature with scales, legs that go straight down, teeth, and a cute little baby dinosaur right there in the swamp. You could have him as a pet. You could pet him. Then he could eat your sister. It would be awesome. No, that would be bad. That would be bad. This is in Palestrina, a mosaic, an ancient Roman tile mosaic. And it's a scene of what they saw back then on the Nile. So they were interested in what was happening on the other side of the Mediterranean. And there are all kinds of creatures, really interesting looking, especially this one here. Here the natives are restless. Something's got them agitated, and I think it might be this. And I don't think it's a dinosaur. I think it's a it's got two fangs, and I think it matches what we see in rock layers that are below dinosaur rock layers. I think it's a Triassic reptile. So it's extinct like dinosaurs, and today it's extinct, but it may have been not extinct. It may have been another creature that survived maybe on Noah's Ark and then repopulated the earth. When everyone else was huddling at Babel, according to the Bible, the animals, they had a fine time. They just distributed themselves all over the earth. By the way, that's when the Ice Age happened. And during the Ice Age, what happened because of the flood, all this water was locked up in ice caps, which did what? It made sea level 300 feet lower than it is today. So now what are islands today were once land bridges connecting all the continents, except Australia, which is why they have all the wacky animals in Australia. They must have floated there. And there's a crocodile, so we know it's not a crocodile. Whatever that thing was. I call it a gorgonopsid. So if you want to go look up gorgonopsid and then look up the Palestrina Nile mosaic, you can check it out for yourself and see what you decide. But instead of just looking at these and going, oh, it can't possibly be, let's actually examine the evidence from history. This one from Cambodia, and you can see it's got a bull type creature. Fantastic. And then a hippo. And up here you see a monkey. And above it you see... Oh. How do I make that go away? Stop it. There we go. So a parrot, a bull, and then what did you see there with the big plates on its back? It's pretty recognizable. Now you could say that it's... You can say whatever you want about what you think it is. But I say that it's... That we need to at least consider the possibility that whoever carved that in Cambodia at Ta Prohm Temple over 1,000 years ago was looking at an animal that looked exactly like what he carved or what she carved. And that's a possibility we should consider. And it's all over the world. These dinosaur lookalikes come from every continent. So that's clashes with dragons, and actually I think we should expect to find human clashes with dinosaurs after the flood based on what we read in the book of Job, which says about this behemoth. Have you read about the behemoth? It's interesting. It gives anatomy details in the Bible about this creature called the behemoth. I made along with you. That's day 6. Creation. I made along with humans on day 6 the land animals. So that would be behemoth. See, now his strength is in his hips. And if you look at the Diplodocus, the first dinosaur I showed you tonight, the Diplodocus, his hip is the central point. It's the main peak of its body. And the Diplodocus could literally rock up on his hips and use his tail as a third leg, and he could tripod up, the Diplodocus could, to reach higher branches or to do whatever, I guess, you know, to just like a horse. That would be funny for her. Okay, I'm making myself laugh. A horse-like behemoth. Well, anyway, his strength is in his hips. We see that with the size and position of the hips and the muscle connections. It says he moves his tail like a cedar. Like a cedar. Well, that's a tree. What other animal moves its tail like a tree? But the dinosaurs. They're now extinct, but they weren't necessarily extinct thousands of years ago when Job wrote his account. Or when whoever wrote that account about Job wrote it. An ancient account. So this is pretty cool because anatomists, paleontologists, have worked out the muscle attachments. And it literally connected from the hip, connecting to the tail, so that as the dinosaur, and here's my tail, okay, as the dinosaur took a step, its tail would automatically wiggle the opposite direction and it would balance left to right. So he could take these steps and automatically balance, all because of the connection. So when it says he moves his tail like a cedar, it could literally have moved its tail like a cedar tree swaying in the wind, except sideways. And that's right out of Job. Other anatomy from Job confirms that this behemoth might have been a dinosaur. So that's clashes with dragons. And now the last two dinosaur details that I wish I knew, because now that I know them, I see how dinosaurs fit the Bible and biblical history. It has to do with collagen decay. Collagen is a protein. So it's what makes your skin so tough. So you could pinch your skin and go, wow, yeah, skin is tough. It's also in bone, and it's what makes bone flexible and doesn't just break all the time. That's collagen. So it's all throughout your body. It's all throughout any vertebrate, and it's all throughout the dinosaur's body. And yet, collagen breaks down. It's a protein. Proteins don't last forever. Proteins in bone, we actually know how long they last using decay studies. Protein decay in bone. Archaeologists have been doing protein decay studies for decades. And they know it decays in a regular pattern, it decays orderly, and it decays, it's got a shelf life, basically. And the shelf life is about 900,000 years max. More like 500,000 to 700,000 years. There's a wide range of estimates. But let's just remember this, no more than 1 million years can we expect protein to last, unless you dunk this protein in liquid nitrogen, because it's a temperature-dependent decay. The colder it is, the longer it lasts. That's how proteins work. So this is a picture of protein on the left, the collagen. It's a very tough protein. You can see it's literally a cord of 3 strands, which makes it not easily broken. It's what makes up parchment. I think I have a zoom in on that. So this is a Dead Sea Scroll. Parchment is animal skin, and it has lasted for 2,000 years. So we know it can last for thousands of years. But we also see the edges. What's happening to the edges? They're turning brown because of chemistry. Oxygen reacts with it. It's oxidizing. It's falling apart around the edges. Same thing happens to collagen in bone. It falls apart with time because time allows more water to interact with it, more oxygen to interact with it, and to do chemistry that tears apart those collagens. Well, this collagen was published in the journal Science, not just collagen, but red, bloody bone marrow. And there's collagen connective tissue. Here's collagen blood vessels inside this T-Rex. And it's this exact T-Rex that I got to take a picture of when I visited at the Museum of the Rockies. And that's published in the journal Science. So we have definitely collagen still in dinosaur bones. And of course, the scientific community said, no way that's collagen. You must have dropped your lunch into the sample tray, and that's what you took a picture of. And I've heard that. I heard that explanation from the paleontologist at the Smithsonian. I was like, have you heard of dinosaur soft tissue? He goes, yeah, I think it's a mistake. I think they dropped their lunch. Oh, man, I laughed again, and I thought, they must have been having bologna sandwiches. A bunch of baloney. So I looked, and so the scientists and more scientists got together and found another bone from another dinosaur, this time a Brachylophosaurus canadensis, basically a hadrosaur leg, and they found this in the leg. This is a hadrosaur leg, and so they got into the femur, this giant bone here, and they found this, blood vessels made of collagen, bone cells with the nucleus still in the cell, red blood cells in these blood vessels. Look, there's some red blood cells. They called them in the journal Science red blood cell-like elements. They're round, they're red, and they're disc-shaped. Call it what it is. If it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So I call it a red blood cell. They found more in this mosasaur sea creature, and I got to see it, and there's me pointing to it. This is a red patch where its liver was, and it's still colored red. I think it's hemoglobin. So not only do we have collagen, we have hemoglobin remnants in these fossils. Well, hemoglobin, collagen, there's another from a triceratops. None of these proteins should last any more than a million years, no more than a million. So how can we make an assignment of 67 to 70 million years onto these fossils and then still have all this protein inside them? It's a big conflict. But the conflict, we can resolve it by having these fossils deposited during Noah's flood. Because Noah's flood was only thousands of years ago, and this stuff, we know it can last for thousands of years. And so I think that's what happened. I think the flood deposited, here's some more from Triceratops, red blood cells, collagen, blood vessels, all published in science journals. Here's one from a Velociraptor claw, and they published this just 2 years ago, and it shows pictures of the collagen fibers inside the bone in this claw. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool, huh? Yes. Yes, now we're getting excited, Parker. Well, we should expect this from what Jesus said in Mark 10. It says, but from the beginning of creation, God made the male and female. And now, this is Jesus quoting directly a little passage from Genesis chapter 1, as though it's history, and a little bit from Genesis chapter 2, as though it's also history. That's Jesus' view of Genesis, that it was history. And Jesus should have said this because Jesus didn't understand modern science, and Jesus got it wrong. He should have said, but billions of years after the Big Bang beginning, then God made them male and female. Because that's real history. Guys, the history that we're being told comes from humans who already don't like the Bible. They come out of the womb not liking God and not liking His Word. And that's what the Bible teaches. We're all sinners, right? And so if they can invent a history where there is no God in our recent past, then they can push God to the corners so that they can do what they want to do. And that's how we are. That's how we are. That's how we're born. But I'm telling you, there's scientific evidence that supports the idea that the Bible's history is right. And if the Bible's history is right, then everything else in the Bible can also be right, and we can trust what it says about we are sinners and we need to seek this God and to get right with this God and to get to know this God, because He's the one who made us, and that's why He put us on the planet, is to enjoy Him forever. To know God and to enjoy Him forever. This is all from the Bible. The same Bible that tells us that there was a beginning, and right from the beginning, creation week, that was the beginning. And there's no billions of years of Big Bang. There's none of that in Jesus' view. And that fits what we see with collagen decay. And there's also carbon decay. And I've got 2 minutes, so I'm going to have to roll through this. But carbon decay is like radiocarbon. And we have the shelf life of it is even shorter than it is for collagen. Collagen is 1 million years. Radiocarbon only lasts 100,000 years, and it automatically decays into nitrogen. So there should be no radiocarbon in dinosaur bones. So when we looked for radiocarbon, we didn't really expect any, necessarily, because the shelf life is 100,000 years. But if these bones are fewer than 100,000 years old, would we maybe see some? You have to say yes, because otherwise I wouldn't have a fifth point. So detail number five, and that's a vertebra from a hadrosaur, and we tested it, and sure enough, radiocarbon. We tested the horn, the triceratops horn, right over this eyebrow. It's called the brow horn. The horn court, we found radiocarbon in that. We found it in this exact sample from the Carnegie Museum. This is a Diplodocus at the Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh. And we found radiocarbon, and it's colored, look how dark it is. And I thought, it's dark because of all the minerals that have replaced the original bone. Guys, that's what I was taught when I went to museums as a kid. A dinosaur fossil is a rock in the shape of the bone, but all the original bone is gone. Not true, not true at all. We have blood vessels, we have original bone material, we have collagen still in the bone. And I thought, since these are darkened, they've been heavily mineralized, I don't expect to find any radiocarbon, and yet it was there. Plenty of radiocarbon. We found some in a, what is that one? Do you recognize that? Dinosaur? Thank you, Stegosaurus. You guys. Of course, this is from the Gobi Desert, China, and we found some in this dinosaur. We found it in coal. We found it in diamonds. All these earth materials that have carbon still have radiocarbon, as if all these earth materials, including fossils, are only thousands of years old. So we have scientific evidence that backs up the Bible here. You have to go look up Luke 1:70, And here's the bottom line, here's the point. If I have told you of earthly things, now, is the creation of earth an earthly thing? Say yes. Okay. Then you can trust me when I talk about heavenly things. If I've told you about earthly things, like the earth got flooded, is the global flood an earthly thing? Yes. Well, we have science to back that up. And we have science to back up the earthly things about the earth being recently created and recently flooded, the recency of earth's creation and flooding. That's an earthly thing. If you believe that in the Bible, and there's scientific reason to believe it, then we can believe when it says heavenly things, like we need to be reconciled to our loving Heavenly Father. And that's the kind of stuff we want to display in our museum, which we're building here in Dallas with your help and support. We actually begun construction. Come by and see the progress as it happens at the corner of Royal and Luna down in Dallas. We also have all kinds of resources for you. We didn't bring them today because your church said, we don't sell stuff on Sunday, which I totally respect. But that can't stop you from ordering the digital version online right now. You could download this if you want. So if you want a family guide to dinosaurs, we have that. I've got a little book called Dinosaurs in the Bible, and you just go to store.icr.org and you type in the title you want and you download it, and you've got it on your tablet or reader. All of our books are digital. And then if you want to order the DVD of me giving this talk, and you've got the Dinosaurs and Man, we also have a brand new resource I wanted to show you. And you can get this digitally also. It's our first children's book. So if you've got grandkids, perfect gift for them. And every page beautifully illustrated. And it gives the basics. It gives the dinosaurs, you know, in biblical history, in the context of biblical history. It surveys the different kinds of dinosaurs and also what the Bible indicates about their life and history. So these are our resources. We want to get the word out. We want everyone to know there's five clues that show that dinosaurs really fit the Bible and you can really trust what it says. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.